Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing this week?
Good, Jim. Winter's here, right? Like, in the Northeast, we're in Pennsylvania, obviously. We're up here in the Northeast. Wherever you are in the country, I hope you're warmer than we are. But, yeah, it's like cold now. Like, we had a couple days here and there, but I feel like we're in, like, going to be in, like, a 10-day, two-week vortex of, like, it. When you step outside, it takes your breath away. You're like, whoa! Now, we're getting more life-seasoned with each passing year. So it's 2026 now. So it seems to impact us a little differently, but it seems like we're in the depths of winter here in the Northeast. But I'm doing good. No flu.
I'm going to be a little more plain spoken to you. We're getting older, Andy, and we hate the cold and have less and less tolerance for it. So the only good thing is every day further along, we get closer to spring. So anyway, hey, let's get started. It's National Championship Week, Andy. On Monday, Indiana versus Miami. Nobody had that on their bingo card.
No.
Let me give you a quick couple numbers that I find fascinating. I had thought about this. I wanted to research it, and I ended up reading an article that had the information for us. Prior to the season starting, okay, do you want to guess what the odds were of a national championship for either Indiana or Miami, what the numbers were?
What were they odds-wise? Like, yes, for either one?
You know, like 10 to 1, 20
yeah,
to 1.
Seven. Why does the first number that jumps in my head that each one would be like 750 to 1 or plus, maybe? I might be high.
Well, actually, the odds, Miami was 40 to 1. So you bet one. If you bet
75 to 1. Okay, yeah. I'm doing it differently. Go 75 to 1. That would have been my number.
Miami was 40 to 1. Indiana was 150 to 1.
150. So, wow. Wow.
So, I think one of the things that does, Andy, is it tells us that the public looking at it was saying, is the public slow to respond to changes? It's, you don't look at the roster, you look at the name. The name said Indiana. It didn't say Alabama or LSU or Ohio State or Michigan or Georgia. No matter how well they did, remember, they were coming off a playoff appearance and they were still 150 to 1 prior to the season.
So, yes, slow to change. Indiana was coming off a playoff appearance. They got thumped by Notre Dame last year in the first round of the college football playoffs at Notre Dame in one of those first round games. But, you gotta look differently. This is the third straight year, Jimmy, where the SEC is not even making an appearance in the championship game, right? You go back to Michigan, they beat Washington. Ohio State beat Notre Dame last year, and now you've got Indiana and Miami. So the SEC is not the alpha dog anymore in college football. It's the Big Ten. The Big Ten's going for its third consecutive title with Indiana, and they are a prohibitive favorite, although you have to like Miami's defense and the way they're playing football. They both have experienced sort of next level quarterbacks. I thought the Ole Miss Miami semifinal was fantastic, but I mean, overall the SEC is don't be that slow. If you're going to take some odds at the beginning of the year, they, They're not in the championship game for the third year. They had another abysmal showing in the postseason overall in, you know, sort of college football playoffs slash bowl games. I think they were like 2-8 or something like that. My question or my thought is, as we're looking at this championship game and, you know, it all indicate, I have a hard time seeing a path for Miami to win this football game. They're going to want to make it a, like a junkyard dog scrap and, you know, sort of, you know, physical the game up. And that's the thing about Indiana under Cignetti. They prove they're a football chameleon, right? They can go out and drop 55 burger on you without at any second. Now, Miami's defense isn't going to allow that to happen, but they have that kind of offense. But they can also, they also are a very physical and defensive centered football team at the same time. I think with Mendoza and the, you know, the Heisman and the receivers and the explosiveness of their offense, I think it has, this season has overshadowed in terms of the spotlight how actually solid and impactful their defense has. And I would sort of counter in the playoffs that it's either 50-50 or 55-45. This defense is right there in terms of game impact and the way they're impacting the game. And I think that's the big problem for Miami in this matchup, is the balance of Indiana is stronger. And do you want to play a junkyard dog physical game? That doesn't bother them one little bit.
Yeah, to that point, Andy, they, you know, they won the conference championship game against Ohio State 13-10. And that wasn't in, you know, an outdoor cold weather or, you know, where there were some outside influences creating that. And Miami, on the flip side, they've not allowed 30 points to be scored against them yet this year. And, you know, so they've won some of those games. Yeah, they beat Texas A&M 10-3. They held Ohio State to 14 points in the playoffs. So the defense is there. Taking a look at this spread, Andy, it's interesting. Prior to Indiana just walloping Oregon.
Yeah, bad look for Oregon, by the way.
Yes. It was a looking ahead to an Indiana-Miami championship game. The spread was 5.5 points. Once they finished the semifinals, this game opened at 7.5 points. Getting past that touchdown number is a big deal. It's since risen from 7.5 points to 8.5 points. So Indiana, a solid favorite. Other than just, you know, you call it junkyard dog, I call it a rock fight. I think that's what gives Miami a fighting chance. Also the fact that they are playing the game in Miami, so it's almost a home game for the Miami Hurricanes. I think anyone looking for a Miami upset, I think those are the couple things. Can they keep it into a low scoring, low possession kind of game, get some early excitement from the crowd, and use that kind of momentum?
Miami is going to need help. That's just what I see the game. I think it being in Miami and, you know, being kind of a home game, I just think that, I don't know if that's an advantage for Miami. I just think it levels the playing field in terms of conditions, right? Like it's going to be ideal for football. I just think Indiana's going to have to, you know, help them a little bit, maybe be off their game and be penalized, maybe, you know, a couple turnovers. You know, they've proven, to me, Indiana's proven it all across the board. They monkey stomp teams they were supposed to monkey stomp. They beat Oregon in the regular season. They got the very, 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 very best from Penn State, beat them. Ohio State gave them a good shot in the Big Ten championship game. It was a good football game. Like, Ohio State didn't play poorly or anything. Indiana was just better, bigger, stronger, faster, right? Like, that's hard. Imagine saying that 2 years ago. Indiana, then Ohio, you know, just, they were just better. So this isn't sort of this, the stage won't affect them, and the kind of game that it plays out to be, they don't really care. They'll adjust and figure out. If for some reason, which I have a very hard time seeing this happen, that both offenses sort of take off and sort of light it up from the beginning and sort of get their footing and have the defenses backpedaling a little bit, that's fine. You know, Indiana can play that game better than Miami can. So it's just, does the number rise before kickoff on Monday? Does it get to 9, Jimmy? I don't know, but it's a lot of money going on Miami or going on Indiana.
It's been at 8.5 now for several days. And a couple things. Now, you referenced, you know, the Penn State game. Penn State gave Indiana probably the best game of anyone this year. I was at that game, and it followed a bit of the path that I think Miami has to follow, a home crowd, a ruckus home crowd. But what I liked about the Indiana team in that game, they didn't play poorly to let Penn State in the game. Penn State played really well. But Indiana, with their back to the wall, they made every play with the pressure on them at the end of the game. That showed me something there, that they, even if, you know, they're playing against an inspired team. The other note to make here, you mentioned about Indiana, bigger, faster, stronger than Ohio State. And again, defensive lines are typically, especially at defensive ends, smaller than the offensive tackles. But Miami's offensive line has a significant size advantage over Indiana's defensive line. Again, just an idea that Miami wants to turn this into a brute force kind of game. Andy, last thought, you get yourself a minute to tell us who's going to win this game and by how much.
Yeah, I think Indiana wants this game to be like, have some offensive flair to it. I think they get into the 20s against the Miami defense. I'm picking Indiana to win the game. I'm picking Indiana to win by 10 points. And I think in order for Miami to have a say in this outcome, they're going to need help from Indiana.
All right. Very good call, Andy. When we come back, we're going to focus more on Penn State, and maybe for the last time, we're going to look at those Penn State players who are going out the door. They're the ones hitting the transfer portal. Where are they going? Who are the biggest losses? We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We are looking at Penn State football, Andy, and I'm claiming this is going to be the last time we take a look specifically at the Penn State football players heading out the door.
Don't believe you.
Well, I'm sure some of these names are going to come up in the future, but
they will.
Far as, you know, really focusing on this, it's a different world right now. We can look at the numbers astronomical. Penn State is losing 50 players off their roster to the portal. 50. But what I want to point out, Andy, is yes, that's a monster number. But obviously, a big part of this is James Franklin leaving. Notice how I threw in that obviously when talking about James Franklin, his favorite word. Just wanted to make sure you caught it. But Ohio State, for example, Ryan Day is still there. They've got 30 players hitting the portal, Andy, without a head coaching change.
Correct. And they had a very good 2026 recruiting class. Yeah, I think for Penn State, this is a big transition. It's the coaching change. It's the coaching change the fan base wanted for good reason. But, you know, you kind of look at where Penn State is in what we laid out. We talked a little bit about in quarter one how, you know, clearly the Big Ten's the alpha dog conference now in college football, right? Like, they've supplanted the SEC 3 years, 4 years. It's enough. It's good enough for me. I mean, the SEC not making a championship game appearance in either of the 12-team college football playoffs. I know it's 2 years, but they haven't even made it, put a team in the final. They have not had a team reach the championship game. And so in that vein, you know, I'm looking at Penn State and I'm seeing where are they in the Big Ten pecking order. I'm looking at, you know, outgoing. Everyone's going to have outgoing players. Free agency exists now. Transfer portal. Free agency, whatever you call it. You know, how are they going to stay in that? You know, are they a top five team? Can they stay in the top five? You know, Michigan had some transition too. Indiana has reasserted itself. Ohio State's still there. You know, Oregon, regular season, you know, stud, postseason, you know, sort of duck, I guess you could say. I mean, getting monkey stomped again. It's the second time you play the team, and it was worse. And, you know, last year against Ohio State, that to me, they're just bad looks for Dan Lanning, but he's getting his team to that level.
Well, let's, you know, look at, you know, this Penn State roster, Andy. Yeah. And I think the tie into what's going on across the country is, young players now are making the move very quickly if they don't get on the field, and coaches are saying, you know what, the young players with their star rating, give me production. We've seen the model. Both Indiana and Miami are using the transfer portal, bringing in experienced guys. But again, looking specifically at the Penn State players, I think we were all looking for, gee, how many of these guys are going to follow James Franklin to Virginia Tech? A big shoe drop this week. Ethan Grunkmeyer has committed to Virginia Tech. It took a while, especially because James Franklin brought in a quarterback from North Carolina also. But if I look at the list of names going to Virginia Tech, they're mostly the very young players, the veterans who have gone. I think Luke Reynolds is a major loss.
I agree.
I'm losing my earpiece, Andy. I'm sorry about that. But Keon Wiley, who's a veteran linebacker, maybe not a major hit, but most of these players, freshmen, redshirt freshmen.
Right, right. He got some of his guys. They're James Franklin guys. If James leaves Virginia Tech and goes somewhere else next year, they might follow him.
And that's, I think that's one of the points to be made. I think a differentiator here is the players. James Franklin took much of the Penn State recruiting class with him. He took a lot of the first year or second year players. He didn't take many of the veterans. And if you look, it's some of the other schools. I take a look, Andy, at Tennessee.
Tennessee did good on Penn State's roster.
They did. DeJuan Lane, Chaz Coleman, Amari Campbell, Xavier Gilliam. That might be four starting defensive players right there.
Yeah, those are guys that were all on my list. I mean, they lost 50. There was like, you know, who are the players that, you know, whatever. The one I'm looking at them, those guys are on my list. You know, you look at it, it's a two-way street, right? Like Penn State has a new coaching staff. They, you know, they brought 22 or so players from Iowa State have come along with Matt Campbell. That's a lot. It's a big number, but They have a roster to fill out, Jimmy. They need, I would argue that probably Matt Campbell did a little more damage to Iowa State and its roster and its sort of, you know, short-term future than James Franklin did leaving Penn State and going to Virginia Tech. I think not, you know, like he wasn't like, neither coach is holding a grudge against their own school. I'm not putting it that way. I'm just saying in terms of short-term impact, I think Matt Campbell had a more sort of destructive impact on Iowa State's roster than James Franklin had on Penn State. But yeah, AJ Harris is going to Indiana. He's got to be, he's top on my list, Jimmy, just because he's an NFL player. I know you're not a fan of the way he played last year. He did not have his best season. It's no surprise he didn't transfer to Tennessee and follow the defensive coordinator, but he's an NFL draft pick. He's that skilled player. That's a loss. That's just going to be a loss. I love that you mentioned DeJuan Lane. Those were the two guys, those two defensive backs. They were at the top of my list, Jimmy. I think Penn State's backfield, defensive backfield, is going to be probably one of the, there's going to be a lot of transition, but it might be the one that goes through the most. So, you know, you can expect maybe a little bit more growing pains back there in terms of, you know, player and personnel and who they lost and who they have coming in. But those are two big guys that I definitely had on my list were AJ Harris and DeJuan Lane, a corner and a safety. They were very valuable to Penn State roster-wise.
AJ Harris, you're right. I was very disappointed in his performance this year. I expected a whole lot more from him. You know, guy projected to be a first-round pick. I do believe the defensive backs, you know, what they kept in the cornerback room, what they brought in from Iowa State, I think they did a pretty good job talent-wise there.
Terry Smith's coaching.
Terry Smith is back. So, and like I said, I think they got some safety talent from Iowa State also. But, you know, again, sticking with the Penn State guys, a couple of the names, I think Andrew Olish was a, you know, a big name recruit at the tight end position.
Yeah.
We don't know what he would become, but I think it's significant that he ended up at Oregon. You know, I think that's another team that is, you know, sold on his talent. King Mack, kind of a favorite.
Definitely
of mine.
On my list. Yeah, he was on my list too, Jimmy. The sort of the way he played, and you know, he showed the talent that he has. Plus, there was just an innate leadership to him that I thought could have helped Penn State a lot during this transition period. That's part of him for being one of the, you know, seven or eight guys that I've identified as the ones that are sort of leaving a mark. King Mack is definitely one of those guys. Good call, Jimmy.
Well, and what's interesting, Andy, is we really don't know with these players. A lot of it, I think the general rule, like I said, a lot of young players are leaving for opportunities. But some of the veteran players, I start to question, and I wish you'd need truth serum to get the Matt Campbell and his staff to admit to it. But you have players, Amari Campbell came out and said he would have liked to have stayed at Penn State, but he's not appreciated. Easy translation, Penn State wasn't offering him enough money.
Correct. They did not see him as a high-value opportunity cost-wise.
Or as high a value as Amari Campbell put on himself. So I wonder is, you know, a King Mack someone who, gee, maybe Matt Campbell really wanted, but just not at the price that King Mack wanted, but it also NC State. Now it just feels like such a random place for him to go to, Andy, because you know, you don't think of that. Now, is that just NC State decided they're going to offer the most money and that's the investment they're going to make?
Appreciation is in the eye of the beholder. How, you know what I mean? Like, what would it take for him to feel appreciated? Did it have all to do with money and money? Well, money's going to be a big factor. But, yeah, it's a box of chocolates in terms of the reasons. But, you know, I think you said it best when, okay, so they didn't win a national championship. Ohio State, they still have 30 guys in the transfer portal. So that's sort of, I think that, you know, going forward as we look at the next 2, 3, 4 years, even at Matt Camp, even with Matt Campbell being a new coach and at Penn State, that's like, I think that's going to be a regular sort of run-of-the-mill number you can expect to see in free agency, which is about 25% of the roster turning over.
Well, I think there's also, in the situation with Ohio State was probably disappointed with where they finished and how they finished the season. And I think Ohio State, if you look going into the playoffs, they were the team with the fewest number of portal guys making an impact on their roster.
Correct.
See, I think there's also a conscious decision being made at Ohio State that they're going to value guys who have experience. You know, if their choice is a transfer portal guy with a couple years of experience somewhere else versus the 4 or 5-star freshman that they brought in, I think they're maybe adjusting the way they look at it. And it's teams like Indiana and Miami are creating a new mindset of how you build your team, Andy. That's got to be the last word. Coming up, your questions, we ask Andy.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3 of our show. That means this is the segment you take over. We get your questions for Andy. Andy will give us a spectacular answer, and if he doesn't, I will correct him. Ready to go, Andy?
What was that? You're going to correct me? Okay, go ahead. Yes, I'm ready to go.
I started by saying you will give a great answer, but if you don't, that's when I would correct you. All right, let's start with John in Kingston. John says, in many professions, there are laws about leaving your employment and taking your clients with you. A law firm, for instance, should there be rules for a coach leaving one program and then having his best players follow him to his new team?
No, I don't like that. I like a free and, you know, I like capitalism, an open, fair, free market, and, you know, the what you can sell and the money included is what you can sell to a potential customer or employer or player in this case. I'm not keen on that. I off the top of my bald head, I don't have like a constructed concrete reason. I don't like that power being taken away from the players, and because I feel the coaches still have to convince them. Yeah, James Franklin went to Virginia Tech, but is Virginia Tech a place that, you know, Luke Reynolds decided he wants to be at Virginia Tech, one of those guys, you know, that went there. Ethan Grunkemeyer wants to be with James, and it's fine at Virginia Tech. So does that have any plan? I just don't feel I like the open market. I'm not a fan of doing it. Sorry, Don Kingston, but that's, well, I don't like that. I don't like the limitations. I don't like it as a two-way street.
Andy, where I think John has missed the analogy, I think it'd be closer to someone leaving and taking employees with him, not so much clients. I think that's the closer analogy. And even in our legal system, when, you know, there are some restrictive contracts that you sign. But if it's in a gray area, I think the court system, it favors what you talk about, Andy, the freedom of the employee to find work.
Right.
You know, if it's a very limited field and you leave one company, you may not, the restrictions aren't so great on the employee. He has to be able to find employment. So to your point, you know, you don't restrict Luke Reynolds from finding, and I'm using air quotes here, for employment, you know, at Virginia Tech. You don't want to be able, you don't want to rob Luke Reynolds of an opportunity. So,
I was going to follow up on that. If you're going to talk about for the players, well, don't you now have to talk about it for the assistant coaches and support staff, right? Like, look at Matt Campbell. I mean, okay, so head coaches, they can change and move around, but, you know, Iowa State, there's what, 9-10 members of his former coaching / support staff that are now at Penn State. I mean, I think there's 5 on-field coaches, and it kind of leans heavy on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, he brought the associate AD for player personnel. That was his title at Iowa State. He's the GM at Penn State. What's the difference? So,
and Andy, again, the analogy to, you know, out in the real world, someone, you know, your direct boss gets a new job, new opportunity. There's a very good chance he's going to bring members of his old staff with him. All right. Let's go to Matt in Massachusetts, who says, Jim and Andy, I have an unusual question in light of how bizarre the college football playoffs were this season. That's how I've been seeing it. I can't explain it, but there's something that doesn't feel right. Did you ever get that feeling like that since the playoffs started? What do you think, Andy? Doesn't feel right?
I think it doesn't feel right. Like, we're both old. We already acknowledged that at the beginning of our show. We're both old. So, you know, do we see what, as a 12-team college football playoff, I think it's going to go to 16, Jimmy. Does that strike us as too much and too big? That's where I know 4 was too small. We knew that, right? So, you know, was it 8 or was it 12? And is 16 too big? That's going to be my measuring stick. I don't feel it's just off. I don't have that feeling at all right now about it. I think the one thing the transfer portal has done and NIL has done, which might, there's it, it's making even the change that's already happening is big, and this makes it like huge in a tsunami type way. It's actually changed and leveled the playing field. Let's be honest. A blue blood like Alabama did not belong in the playoffs and should have been left out for the second straight year of the 12 team, because that's what they earned. They were put in this year because they are blue blood. There's no other way to say it. So that transition, this championship game may be a little bit of a part of it. I think that is the product. It's going to be like this year in and year out. You can't look at it as, well, they're going to be a good team in 2 years, or everybody's building for now.
Andy, I think you hit it when you use the word different. We've only in our second year of the 12-team playoff. That's very different than what we started to get used to with the 4-team playoff, which was different at one point, and then the 2-team. Hey, Andy, you and I are old enough to remember 1986. Penn State played Miami in what was the national championship game in this little unknown bowl game called the Fiesta Bowl.
Right.
And it was kind of an arranged marriage, that game. That was different from just having the traditional bowl games on January 1st, and then somebody votes for a national champion. Every time it changes, it's going to feel odd, Matt. I think that's what you're going through. And like Andy pointed out, if it goes to 16 teams, that's going to feel a little different also. I like the changes. I like the home playoff games that come with it. I especially like that.
I like that a lot.
Let's move on. Let's hit Randy in Boston, who says, what rule changes would you make to fix NIL and the transfer portal?
So I would, a couple things come to mind. Very good question, Randy. I would probably cap your ability to move at twice, right? Not once, twice. You get your initial commitment. That doesn't count. After you've enrolled and started at commitment one, in other words, you could play for three schools max, right? Three schools max. You get your original and two more. In a 4 or 5 year window, that's it. I would just stop the red shirt nonsense probably and just make it make it 5 years. Just do that. You have up to 5 years and make your medical exemptions real, not what they are now. And I would move I would change the transfer portal window dates. I would move the dates around to fit your newly developing 12/ probably going to be 16 soon schedule. Move the transfer portal so that everybody's in the window, because it was weird. Like, there were a few players on Oregon that were there and some didn't play, but some were playing that were already in the transfer portal. They were playing in the semifinal, but they were in the transfer portal. So, you know, don't make that happen. Don't put players and coaches in that awkward situation. Those would be the changes I would make right off the top of my bald head, Randy.
Well, Andy, with moving the portal, what you also got to remember, at least in this winter time frame, you also have school semester starting.
Correct.
If you push the window back, I know some people say academics doesn't matter at all. Yeah, there are still some players who care about it. If you push it back too far within this time frame in the winter, players are going to miss the start of semesters. I think the answer there is to put it in the spring, after spring semester. Now, does that mess up spring practice for teams? Yeah, I think you change that schedule also. You give them more of a summer window to do workouts, but you make the portal window there. The other thing you mentioned, Andy, about allowing just two, it's funny to say, hey, we're going to allow you to play at three different schools because that's limiting them. That's, you know, a couple years ago, that would have been well, of course.
Who that would was crazy.
No one would be in more than three. The problem I think you run into there is legally somebody will challenge it. You're taking away my freedom. I think the answer there, Andy, is I'm going to tie NIL in with it. It's multi-year contracts for the players, not one-year contracts. And, you know, my thought is a three-year contract with buyout clauses. And, Andy, next segment, we are going to talk about some of the new things coming, and we're going to tie that thought in how it works, because we already had an example of it. Let's sneak in another question really quick.
Okay.
Jeff from Youngstown. Andy, how is your confidence level with this Penn State team with all these three-star players coming in from Iowa State?
Yeah, what is there, 22?
Yes.
Players from Iowa State. I'm confident they will be instrumental in putting some foundational building blocks in place. Do I feel confident that they will be capable of helping this roster be a team that competes for a Big Ten championship? I do not. I do not. There's a couple other factors, but I have a hard time seeing that as competitive. at that level.
All right, Andy, that's the last word for quarter three. One more segment to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Andy. I'm Jim. We're talking college football, Andy. And I wanted to save this last segment to talk about some of the changes that are coming to college football, and they are coming. And there were a couple aspects of the questions we got from our listeners in quarter three that kind of tie into this. One of them is we got the question about what changes would we make, to fix NIL and the transfer portal. And I think one of those fixes is multi-year contracts. And I don't know, it's not like they can't do that now, okay? But I don't think they're prevalent. And we saw this that Brendan Sorsby, the quarterback at Cincinnati, he got the big money from Texas Tech to transfer there. But he had a buyout clause in his contract with Cincinnati where it will cost $1 million for him to leave. I think that's a great way to do it. And I think an answer to, the players, they come in 1 year and move, give them a 3-year contract. Maybe has, escalators for year two, year three. Maybe there are some clauses in there with number of games played, something to that effect. But you also give the player a buyout. Where this works really well for the player, he's guaranteed 3 years of compensation, even if he gets hurt or underperforms.
Right.
But by giving a buyout, if he way overplays his contract, he can buy out and move on. The teams overall will get the security of players sticking around for a few years. And if you play out your 3 years, you still have an opportunity to hit the portal, like free agency and professional sports. And the last thing I was given the criticism, you can't force a 3-year contract on players. You're right.
Right.
You can't. And if a player says, nope, I don't want to do that, I want to take the risk, play 1 year at a time because I'm that confident in my ability.
Right.
So it's a different contract for that player. What do you think of that?
So I'd be interested to see. I'm not sure if it's prevalent that teams have this. It sounds kind of smart on Cincinnati's behalf to sort of recoup $1 million of the money they would have spent. And for the player, for Thorsby, it's like, I've still got a $4 million. I've still got $4 million out of the $5 million that Texas Tech was willing to give me. The multi-tier year one gets a little sticky for me. Who's taking the risk there, right? Like, are schools willing to risk that much elevator? You know what I mean? Like, is that what is best for them, or is it 1 year? It's also at this level and the amount of money, because let's just call it what it is, Jimmy, and a good friend of mine who's a huge Penn State fan, as soon as he hears this, he's going to text me with a grumpy old man text. They're professional college football players, right? Just call them that. But I think I like the contract two ways. I like it for the player, and I like it for the university. If these are going to be 1-year contracts or 1-year commitments, which they generally seem to be at this high money stakes, I think this is the way to go for the universities to try and establish a little bit of roster stability. Look, you can go and transfer five times if you want, but it's going to cost you each time. So you have to look at the opportunity cost and the value proposition to you. So I like it. I think it's really smart. I hadn't thought of it before. And, you know, it's kind of one of the first ones that, you know, the public is learning about or knows about, that there was this sort of back end to it. So again, new, a lot of layers to it, a lot of change. It's very different. I think this has some legs to it future wise, because I have a hard time. I think we both agree the 2 and 3 year thing is a little down the road, maybe, as this NIL and transfer portal becomes more developed. It looks very short term right now. Look, 50 players from Penn State, 30 players from Ohio State, et cetera.
Well, yeah, you know, Andy, I think I'll use a couple examples to explain how I think it would work. And I didn't mean to, you know, use the whole segment for this, but Chaz Coleman is a great example. Penn State identified him as a huge talent. They didn't get the payoff in his freshman year, but there was probably the thought, okay, it's going to take a couple years for him to become refined enough to get where we think he could reach. So you sign him, and I'm going to throw numbers out. Maybe it's, okay, here's the 3-year contract. $250,000 first year, $500,000 second year, $750,000 the third year. But you could buy out of your contract for $250,000 or $500,000, just for a number.
Right. Just throw numbers out.
His potential, we see how valuable he is. He probably got close to a $2 million contract by leaving. Well, you know what? That would have been worth it for him to buy out of his contract.
Absolutely.
But let's say he didn't fulfill that promise, or he did okay, but it wasn't. Hey, he's guaranteed 3 years of payments, or he can't just leave for an extra $10 because there's a buyout part of this. So I think it protects both sides, Andy. So anyway, let's move on to a couple other things, because I want to hit some of the things that are changing in the game. You know, I brought up that Brendan Sorsby case as the quarterback. So I think those contracts, there's going to be a lot of talk about that. There's also what's going on is the coaches have a committee, a conference, whatever, where there's talk of changing the redshirt rule. Used to be you walk on the field once, you know, no redshirt. They changed it to allow players to play 4 games. Now they want to change it. You could play up to 9 games and still have your redshirt season, Andy. What do you think?
So this comes from the coaches. NFL.
Doesn't matter, Andy.
It's the coaches group. They want to more than double it. They know if they were to propose and say they would like it to be just make it 5 years, right? Like, that would have been one change. You asked me, I said I would have made the 9 games. Is we're going to make it 5 years without making it 5 years, because we know if we ask for 5 years, that's going to be an abject no. This is the way to make it a 5-year thing without, it's kind of weird that you have to say to do it. It's making it 5 years without making it 5 years, because the 4 games has now become too hard to manage. I think it has in the NIL transfer and as much turnover that goes on in rosters. It's not, you can't look at the 4 games the way you did the 4 games 5 years ago, Jimmy. It's completely different now. So, and the players want the opportunity to market themselves. I think the players would be a fan of this as well. So it kind of makes sense in this free agent open market of NIL and transfer portal. I mean, I wish they would just go ahead and make it 5 years, but I am in favor of, if what it takes is getting it to 9 games, I like that, because I think both sides I could see benefits on a two-way street, and that's when change is necessary. I could definitely see the value for the players and the value for the school, the organization, the coaching staff, and the roster.
Well, it's reached the point where these players, because they're getting paid, there's that incentive to come back again. They're getting extra medical red shirts. They're getting so much anyway. there's a Penn State player who's coming in who spent 7 years at UCLA, Andy. Right. He's now in his eighth year. There's another player who's going to take the field for with his seventh team also this season. It's gotten crazy. All right, the other conversation, Andy, and it's got to be decided relatively soon, is do you expand the playoffs from 12 to 16 teams?
I don't think this is a question. I think this is a tidal wave that can't be stopped. I really don't. I think it has. Doesn't it just feel like it? Okay, four wasn't enough. Was it going to be 8 or 12? They went for 12. They had to do some shoehorning to get it to 12, right? To get 12 on the table and pass. 12 is a good number. But I think 16 is a better number. And I would like, because 16 eliminates sort of that bye thing. And, you know, bye teams haven't done very well after they've had the bye week as compared to teams that play. I like it. I think you go to 16 as soon as you can.
Well, Andy, the holdup on it is actually the Big Ten.
They want it all.
They want 24 teams. They're probably using it as leverage. They want to say, well, we'll allow, you know, less than 24 right away. Let's go to 16, but we want it to go to 24 by year three, which is just, I think, a money grab, you know, because then they want automatic bids. They want the extra revenue.
That's what they want, the automatic bids, Jimmy. They're leveraging their strength at 24 and 16 because they want automatic bids. They want to protect their schools. And they're the alpha dog right now.
The problem with it, Andy, is that's looking at it strictly from a financial sense. You Correct. Could end up, you know, with 500 teams. By 500, I mean 6 and 6 teams sneaking into the playoffs. When you get to that point, you know, the argument of 12 teams versus 4 was the sanctity of the regular season. It becomes less important. I don't think that has happened with 12 teams, and I don't think it would necessarily happen with 16. But if you put it out to 24 teams, I think you are messing with the sanctity of the regular season and the value of it.
I agree. I think 24 is a bad number, just as bad as 4. I really do. I think 24 is just as bad as 4. The last thing I'll say, you can have 16 teams and have your Tulane and JMU that have no chance. I don't have a problem with that. You can't have it at 12 and leave Notre Dame out and have two teams in like that. You can't do that. And I think 16 allows that 3-loss demarcation line to be more conference centered, which means more for the SEC and Big Ten, which is the way it should be because they're the two power conferences.
All right, Andy, that's going to be the last word, at least for this week. I'm sure during the offseason we're going to be talking about these things quite a bit. Thank you, Andy Shea. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.